Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Working for a Living Radio Show, where we present opinions that matter. Tonight, we're joined by co-hosts Jeff Brown, Terry Crowell Norris, Travis Carr, and I'm your moderator, Leroy McKnight. We have a few announcements tonight. First one, today is May 1st. And around the rest of the world, this is designated as International Labor Day, a day originally intended to be a tribute to those at the Haymarket Massacre in Chicago, Illinois, in the 1800s. We never, as a country in the United States, recognized that day. The second one is, please remember to decline to sign any petition you are presented with regarding Michigan prevailing wage. That's for the only for the Michigan residents that listen to the show. The building trades have an issue going on, and if you decline to sign, it helps to keep the prevailing wage, preserve it. So they would like everybody to decline to sign any petition regarding prevailing wage. Third announcement, our brothers at Verizon are still on strike, brothers and sisters. And please support them by clogging up Verizon's support operations by calling their national customer service line and just asking a whole lot of questions. That number is 800-837-4966. I'm sure you have a lot of questions for Verizon while the strikers are on strike, and that does help them because it deters this Verizon's efforts. So on to emails and comments. We had a couple emails here. First one came from Edna. Oh, my. I had no idea people on the assembly line don't have time to tie their shoe between operations. Again, that's from Edna. And, Edna, that's a sad commentary. We're sad to hear that and have that going on in the plants ourselves. So the second email, things have gone along way downhill since I was in the plant. This needs to be stopped. That's from Stan. Thank you, Stan, for your email this week. In the news, I'm going to hand this off. Let's see. Let's get the rest of the co-hosts online. I believe this here is Jeff Brown. We'll get Jeff on. Jeff, are you there?
Hey, Leroy, how are you?
Hey, thank you, Jeff. We're doing pretty well here this evening, and let me get Travis on. Hi, Travis. How are you doing?
Hey, Leroy. Pretty good. How are you doing, Leroy?
I'm doing real good. Thanks for being on the show tonight. We had Travis on last week for his first time, and I think everybody was real pleased at that. We didn't get any email, but we got a lot of feedback from everybody on Travis's part of the show last week. So don't see Terry Crowell just yet. Perhaps Dave Fillion might want to come on and take Terry's spot in the news, and then we'll go on to the feature. For now, though, Jeff, throw that over to you for the in the news section. I know you have something, and then we'll see if we get David or Terry on for the second portion. Go ahead, Jeff.
Okay. This is, too, for all the Teamsters out there, all the retirees concerning their pension cuts. KansasCity.com is reporting that they're hearing hints and feedback from somebody in the Treasury Department that it looks like the Teamsters' petition to cut the Teamsters' retirees' pensions is going to be denied. And that's good news for the retirees. They won't be taking the 60% pay pension cut a month. I know that shouldn't mess with people's pensions. So that's, to me, that is just plain wrong. These people work for all that money for all of those years, and it should not be touched. And I don't think that Jimmy Hoffa Sr. would allow this to happen. But they're expecting to make the announcement on May 7th, which is sometime this week, as to whether it's going to be approved or denied. This decision affects about 400,000 people throughout the Central States area. So we're hoping that the Treasury Department supports the retirees and denying the application. Because they say in that Central States Pension Fund is expected to go broke within about a decade unless the benefit cuts are made immediately, or unless it could gain about $11 million in new funding. So either way, you know, the Teamsters are in a big world of hurt, and that's probably due to money mismanagement on the part of the Teamster president, James Hoffa, and his buddies at the top. But right now, it looks pretty good. We're holding our breath at May 7th, the announcement that it will be denied. That's what we're hoping for. So, in fact, my aunt and uncle were just here and wanted to know if I had any new information on this issue, and I let them read this whole article from KansasCity.com. So, there's been a retiree, Mike Walden. He's a retired Teamster. He's been lobbying Congress and the Treasury Department very hard. He's the one taking the lead on this for the retirees. So we'll just sit and wait till May 7th comes around.
And okay. Okay, Jeff, we'll get any other discussion. I see David Fillion's here on. Welcome, David.
How are you doing tonight, Leroy?
Pretty good, David. Do you or Travis have any? We'll start with you, David. Do you have any other comments on the Teamster matter regarding their pension in the Central States being cut by as much as 50%? And
No other than I hope that that decision gets rescinded and they're able to keep their pensions. It'll be interesting to see what happens this week.
Yeah. Travis, you have anything on that one?
Yeah, same here. It's seems like an important battle to fight, but and hopefully they can get that one fixed, because obviously that's one of the parts of our compensation that they already got our labor. They need to pay us our retirement. You know, obviously working at Jeep, I'd like to see my pension come back as well. You know.
Right. Right. Well, I'm in your corner there, brother. I'd like to see your. I know you're a tier two there. And I'd like to see a defined pension plan come back for all employees. I think you have to start a new one. You couldn't come into the old one. But still, it's still possible for them to do that, as well as give you health care in retirement. You know, so, and that might even have to be another structure. But at least you'd have it. You don't have to work till you're 65 in order to get, you know, Medicare. So that's off topic a little bit. But let me say – you know, even the companies are mad at this. UPS put some stuff out about this. A lot of these folks in the Teamsters actually work for UPS. They're going to, if this goes through, they have to pay $3.8 billion. And if they have to pay it, then they have to pay it. But they said, you know, when we bought out of this pension plan, the laws were such that they couldn't come after retirees any longer, and they would be, no matter how the pension trust got handled, they would be covered under the Pension Guarantee Trust Board, or PBGC, and that's the federal government, if there was a problem. And now Congress has changed the law any number of times with the Pension Protection Act and then the Act of 2014, and change this. And that's sad that they've come in here after the fact when pensioners are, you know, already drawing their money and Congress really causing this problem. So as we consider who we send to Congress, we ought to see if they're disposed to be changing these pension laws yet again after the fact. And that's just simply wrong that that takes place by Congress. And, you know, the people are mad, but the companies are mad as well, because they figured that this was enough to sustain everybody. And the people, you know, our members, the Teamsters thought it was enough to sustain everybody. And now with the new laws changing and the accrual systems, structures recalculating, this has become a serious problem. And we wish, I believe all of us wish, our brothers in the Teamsters and brothers and sisters in the Teamsters the very best success in this. And if the companies have to pay more money, so be it. So be it. Let them pay. They looking around, these companies are swimming in money. You know, we've talked last week where GM's one-year profit went from $4.5 billion to $9.7 billion, I believe it was. And they're paying the CEO another 70% on her original money from last year. She made that much more. So they're swimming in money. They can do that. So good luck to the Teamsters in their real hard efforts, and that brother up there from Wisconsin that's leading the way. Thank you, brother, for doing that. We appreciate it. So for now, David, do you want to take on that next item in the news, please?
Yeah, I have one more thing on the pensions. I put up the language for the CR Omnibus legislation that was passed. If anybody wants to read that, it's there on the page now.
On the Working for a Living page.
That's correct.
Okay. So anybody that wants to read that may have to join the page, but certainly, you know, we welcome you to come on and join the page if you want. David has that posted, so we appreciate that, David. Anything else? Anybody, Scott, on that issue? Okay, then go ahead, David, on the next issue.
All right, yeah, we got the Verizon strikers still out on strike. Their contract ended April 9th. The workers there are strongly reacting to the ultimatum delivered by management this Thursday. Company officials declared that the concessionary proposals they handed the union was management's last and best and final offer. As the strike by 39,000 workers continues into its third week, workers also face an April 30th cutoff of their health care benefits, which would have been yesterday. I certainly hope that that doesn't happen, but it appears like it's going to. I know they face a serious issue with scab workers. However, they are mounting a fight back, and they are seeing some support from the community. The hotels that put up the scabs have discharged them and kicked them out. Also, transportation to the place was to the plant. It's been cut off as well. I really appreciate the support from the community for these workers. And hopefully the strike will end soon. They want to do just about the same thing here at Verizon that they do at GM, and that's to force out the older workers and replace them with lower-paid workers with no pensions and health care when they retire. So, you know, we're seeing this in every sector. So the Verizon strike is a very important strike to win.
Yes. Jeff or Travis, do you have anything on the Verizon workers on strike?
I don't have anything on the strike on union, but I did. I was at Sprint last weekend, and there was a young man being waited on about a new phone. He was asking about Verizon, and I told him not to go to Verizon because they are on strike. And the young man, it looks like in his late 20s, looked at me. He says, "Really?" It turned out he was a member of the IBEW. He says, "Well, I ain't going to Verizon then." Even the Sprint worker didn't hear nothing about it. And he is, so that means probably more money for Sprint. People who are going to go will probably transfer from Verizon to Sprint. Hopefully that's what helps the strikes and workers at Verizon, because Sprint's going to be losing a lot of money. So I did my part. Educated the young man on the strike.
Yeah, thanks, Joe. Yeah, that's good. Travis, you got anything on the Verizon strikers?
Nothing, just polling for them. I think it's just another
example
of a company that's actually got a commanding market share of the industry, and here they are trying to basically monopolize more on the backs of labor. You know, just another example of greed. So I hope they get it together and win their strike.
Yeah, me too.
We got to remember that Verizon is also one of the companies that is considered to be a welfare corporation. You know, there are people complaining about citizens being on welfare, they shouldn't be on there, but nobody seems to care about the companies who get money from the government and not paying their taxes and still getting a tax refund. Verizon is part of this group that is considered to be on this corporation welfare list. So keep that in mind, please.
Right. Go ahead, Travis.
They haven't had a pay raise there in 5 years.
Okay.
The average take-home pay after taxes is $37,000.
Yeah, little on the weak side. Yeah, yeah. Travis, do you have anything else to add? You good with that?
That was about
okay.
It. Yep.
Okay. Good. All right. I'll just take it. And Jeff's point is well taken. You know, there's a lot of people mad about folks on welfare, single moms that are making minimum wage and working for somebody like Walmart that gives them a application for welfare when they hire in the largest employer in the nation. You know, they give these poor people an application for welfare, and they're all worried about them. Maybe if these companies paid their people properly, they wouldn't be on welfare, first thing. Second thing is you ought to see the amount of money they make the individuals, the people, citizens of the country. These corporations make them look like pikers when it comes to welfare. The billions that they're given or relieved of in debt and taxes, and it's just amazing how that's gone on. So it's just a horrible thing. And let me add this to the Verizon issue. As you heard, we're supporting everybody calling this support number. And the one thing that the workers in the union cannot do is encourage people not to pay their bill. And I suggest that folks, we're here on this show. We're not part of union leadership. We can ask for just about anything, and we're immune from secondary boycott information, et cetera. But I'm going to, because of the law, I'm going to go out there and say, if you have a Verizon phone, and I'm sure you're happy with your service, I'm not saying anything bad about this company, but just don't pay your bill for this month. They won't cut you off. They can't afford to lose your business if enough of you do it. Just don't pay your bill for this month. You watch and see how fast that strike gets fixed. Go ahead, David.
There's also another thing, too. If all of a sudden you're, you know, under a two-year contract or whatever, and you're having trouble having signal, they have to provide you a service. And most companies, what they do when you're not able to receive a signal in the area where you live, they have to send out staff to check that and make sure that you have signal. And if they can't provide it to you, then you're out from underneath your contract.
There
I did this before.
Okay. So there's some things we can do beyond just calling that service number to help these Verizon strikers. So I encourage us all to do everything we can to do that. Having said that, has anybody else got anything else on the Verizon strikers? I think I have another caller in the queue here. We'll see who that is in a second. But if without anything else on the Verizon strikers, Travis, you want to give us an update about FCA and what happened this week in the news there? And then I'll check on our guests. Okay.
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
So in the free press this week, they kind of went over FCA's plans to move the Ram to Sterling Heights and move some Jeep product to Mexico. And, you know, basically Sergio has been throwing this around for a while. The disturbing part about it is during our 2015 negotiations, our president, Dennis Williams, actually made a statement about Sergio's plan. And basically his statement was that the UAW's got to get in alignment with making it more readily available and easy to move these products in and out of our plants. And to me, that was astounding that he said that because of all the jobs that are attached to these products. And basically you can see as it goes down, you know, one of the things that it's doing is it's making each of the individual shops compete for product. So he's basically playing the shell game. He's moving all the small cars to Mexico, now a couple small SUVs to Mexico. He's building plants overseas and so on and so forth. So, yeah, we have this win because, okay, well, the Ram truck is going to Sterling Heights, but right now Sterling Heights is already feeling the loss because they're laid off. So each of these product moves also comes with hardship for the employees there. And although, you know, who knows what the actual employment numbers will be done at the end of shuffle, each one of these plants that's affected goes through hardship before they ever get it turned back around. So right now, SHAP is down, and they're waiting for a new product in order to come back and eat. And when they do, then Warren's going to be down. And they're going to be waiting years for the Grand Wagoneer, which is, you know, just on the drawing board at the moment. You know, just like, and I guess he kind of learned his lesson. And, you know, I'm in the Toledo plant, and they were building the Liberty and Nitro and decided to shut down production and start retooling without any plans to leave something on the market. So for a year, they had no market share in the midsize SUVs. So basically, they don't want to make the same mistake twice. So, like, we're losing the Cherokee. We're probably looking at being out of work for 6 or 7 months. And although they're saying they're retaining all the jobs, honestly, a couple thousand of our jobs are going to go to Belvedere. So, yeah, UAW is not losing any dues, but there's a lot of individual hardships that go along with these moves. So I know there's been a couple things where they said, oh, is this a great week for the UAW? Is it a horrible week because they're losing all these small cars, but they're gaining all this product allocation on larger SUVs? To me, it's a lose-lose because although we are retaining job levels, at best we're staying even. But like I said, we're moving from town to town. So now the town of Toledo is going to lose a couple thousand jobs, but the town of Belvedere is going to gain a few. So it's really – I don't see how any loss of jobs in any factory can be looked at as a win, or losing any production to foreign entities could be looked at as a win. So to me, it's a loss. You know, I mean, honestly, at the end of the day, a lot of the reason they're doing this is because they don't want to invest in brick and mortar in the United States. So in order to forego the cost of anything like that, or to, you know, for all these plants that have a failing product, they could just as easily ramp up their production, bank them some overtime, so on and so forth, but they're basically just putting one plant down to set up another, and most of the product, the plants that are down for, it's all in the future. So, like, when we go down to lose the Cherokee, we have an extensive retool before we get a new product. Until then, only a third of the plant will be working. And then part of the product allocation that we're getting is still pushed off a year beyond that. So we're probably right off the cuff. When we do return to work, we're going to lose all overtime, and we're going to lose about 40% of employment. and we might gain another 10% back, you know, a year or two down the road when they introduce the pickup truck. So, like I said, all these, I'm sure they're great and beneficial to the company, but they're horrible for the workers on the line. And then, you know, some of the people are going to be subjected to, hey, if you want to keep your job, you better pick up your family and move a few different states. I think, but like I said, it's been pretty simple and easy for Sergio to accomplish because our leadership is looking in line with this, going, yeah, this is a great idea. Not looking at alternative things that they could present to force them to retain the employment levels and similar numbers in each of the areas, you know, and do things that are, you know, not only beneficial to the company, but also are looking out for the better interest of the workers. You know, like right now, like I said, in Toledo, we've been working 60 hours scheduled and every Sunday and all this other stuff. And the last 2 years, we've built the production number or, you know, broken the production record for our plant in Toledo by 100,000 units, two times in a row. So these guys have been working harder than that plant's ever worked. And the reward is going to be half of you guys are going to be out of a job and the rest of you are going to be sitting on your butt for who knows how long. You know, and like I said, it's testament to the fact that the whole strategy of thinking the UAW is going to be partners with the company is just, it's a minefield, you know, because each one of the decisions when you start considering the company's best interest, you know, don't get me wrong, we want the cars to sell. We want to be maintained employed. But as far as the actual structuring of the day-to-day operations, we should be looking at nothing but the interest of the membership and nothing in the interest of the company. When it comes to building a quality product, that's when we're supposed to have interest in the company.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Travis, for reporting on that article in the Free Press here. We really appreciate that. That's kind of leading into our featured story, and that's going to deal with it's a follow-up about Travis' article, and we're going to talk about moves to Mexico, and we'll talk a little more about what Travis brought out in his report. But this is in the broader sense about Ford and Chrysler already announcing a product to go to Mexico, and GM has said they're going to import a Buick from China, which effectively sent that Buick over there to China. So before we get started, let me just read this quote that's a favorite quote of mine, and that's from Aristotle: a problem defined is a problem half solved. And here on this show, we like to define these problems and try and at least get them half solved by and through our talking about them and point out the deficiencies of the IUAW and the companies of dealing with these problems as they come up, and we point them out here on the show. So having said that, on the greater issue of work going to Mexico and anything more on what Travis just reported that happened this week regarding his own plant, please feel free to jump in there. We do have somebody in the queue here in the switchboard, and if that person wants to come on, just push one, and it's a friend of ours, by the way. So just come on and push one, and I'll get you on the show here. But for now, we have the co-hosts and myself here this evening, and we'll open this up for discussion. Travis, you've just finished that up. I want to ask you this question regarding your report. I know that your plant also was the plant that led the way and chastised the vice president of the FCA department when he came to speak, strongly chastised him when he came to speak in Toledo regarding the agreement, that the tentative agreement that they tried to get passed in the first round. Your plant led the way of turning that down the first round with like a 87 no vote, I believe. So it's a lot.
Yep.
Do you think maybe some of this is motivated by your actually standing up for solidarity and what's right in your plant regarding don't be given these horrible contracts to us, and you stood up for what's right? Do you think that could be? I don't want to put you on the spot, and you don't have to answer if you don't want, because I know your position there. Is that
actually? I have a segment saved that was an interview with Norwood Jewell and Dennis Williams, and it was during the original tentative agreement, and they pretty much thumbed their nose at Toledo. Because basically the city of Toledo rallied together because originally they said they were going to pull the Wrangler, not the Cherokee. And the city of Toledo spent millions of dollars, purchased some land, began to abate it, you know, did all these things to kind of make a property available for them to expand the Wrangler because they had threatened to remove our product. When the tentative agreement came out, to everybody's shock, there was no intention of moving the Wrangler. It was all about moving the Cherokee. So here it was. You know, we'd rallied and sold bonds and got the city to purchase this land and cleared it off and what have you, and it was never the plan. And basically, Norwood and Dennis both kind of gave a little chuckle to it, you know, and that in and of itself kind of tells you there's something punitive there, you know. Basically, at the end of the day, you know, we were definitely vocal about not wanting to go along with this whole new UAW that doesn't seem to have the best interest of the workers at heart and seems to be looking at the company's goals and needs a little bit more strongly than the workers. And yeah, I'm absolutely sure that they weren't happy that Toledo didn't play ball. And I wouldn't be surprised if pulling the Cherokee didn't have a little bit to do, you know, that decision had a little bit to do with our reaction to the national contract. You know, but unfortunately that's
okay.
Again, when we sit there and give the company's carte blanche to shuffle these products around, like I said, once again, you also make incentives for individual plants to compromise in order to not be threatened by this, you know? So basically it's a way, another level of how to pit the workers against each other, you know, and at least
okay.
From my point of view.
Okay. And I would say that being punitive to the membership is a deficiency of the IUAW leadership and backing out on an agreement that they make with a local community like Toledo, where they've asked them to spend money, sell bonds, all manner of things, backing out on that agreement and getting that work in there, is also a deficiency of the IUAW. So having said that, if you don't mind, Travis, I'm going to try and see if Jeff has some more to add. Ford just did some of the same things here a couple of weeks ago where they sent, what, $1.6 million worth of assembly operations down to Mexico. Jeff, you want to comment on some of that and anything else that's been discussed here in this story that we're covering, feature story tonight?
Yeah, what they're doing is they're building another plant down there, I believe. Their plan is, like Travis says, they want to build all the small cars in Mexico. My plant lost the overflow build for the Fusion, we went back to Mexico. So now we're making the Mustang and gearing up for the Lincoln Continental. And my whole thing is with the Big Three is when they had the money in the 1990s and late 1980s, when they were making money every quarter, They did it to themselves. You know, we hear a lot of people, a lot of Southern senators in 2009 bailouts that, you know, the workers got to make the cuts. Well, my belief is that the Big Three, except for Chrysler, when they had all this extra cash, they went out and bought foreign car companies. Ford bought Land Rover, they bought Jaguar, you know, GM bought Schwab, a couple other companies, and they weren't making any money. So their bad spending habits in the 1990s is what caused their downfall 10 years ago. It's not the workers' fault. A lot of people don't understand this. It's, you know, there's a lot of stories going on. People don't know the truth. And fortunately, if old timers were old enough to remember what happened. As soon as Ford sold Land Rover and Jaguar, they started making money again. So it's just mismanagement by the big two, I'll say, because Chrysler didn't do much. I did see something about Sergio Juan's, they were saying that they are still looking to partner up with either Ford, GM, or Volkswagen. I think there's one other company recently, he said.
Yeah, Google is the most latest, greatest.
Yeah, he's still trying to sell them off, so, you know, join partnership. And that's, we can take that as far back. I thought when he ran Chrysler, he was trying to merge with GM and Ford. So it's not something that just happened. Chrysler's always had a problem. I just can't believe what we're going through these days, the whole country. To me, it's very disappointing. I have to remember to, you know, turn my head and fight the issues as much as I can. But, yeah, people who want to need to research what I just said, please do, because that is a fact. They did buy other foreign car companies in the 1990s that did not help them in any shape or form. So,
here it is again, you know, just a few months after contract season when they've told us that they've squeezed every drop of juice out of the lemon. And sure enough, here it is. They all of a sudden have money to spend money on infrastructure overseas. Yeah.
Infrastructure and big bonuses for the CEOs. You know,
astronomical.
And these new hires, second tier, I voted no on a national agreement, and I had a second tier worker come up to me in my area and asked me how I voted. I said, I voted no. He asked me why. And my exact words were, I wanted you guys, second tier, to get a pension, health care, and a pay raise from the top tier. And I wanted to see retirees get back everything we gave up. I'm going to keep doing that until either I die or somebody at Solidarity House gets their head out of their butt and starts doing the right thing for the membership.
Well, I appreciate that, brother, because you're speaking on my future, too. And I really appreciate that you're sticking it out, because I think that's part of the issue, too, is a lot of people have a hard time empathizing with other people's problems. You know, and actually that's one thing when I got elected steward, I said, oh, my goodness, you're 3,500 people in my plant. That's future is tied to mine. And, man, I don't want to see myself settle for less, but I certainly don't want to see all these other hardworking people settle for less either. You know, so that's commendable.
Right.
That,
I think you and all of the Tier 2s can rest assured, notwithstanding that I know there's some ill will in the plant floor when you're working next to somebody that's making twice as much as you. I know that's going on. But believe me, there's a whole lot of folk out here that work or have worked in the plants, retired now, that think everything that's gone on since 2007 regarding Tier 2 and taking them out of the pension plan and out of the health care plan is just absolutely wrong. And it should not have occurred, and we would like to see it reversed as soon as possible. In other words, start a defined pension plan for all those folk who have been hired after the 2007 agreement and get them health care in their retirement. These companies are swimming in money, swimming in money. They can afford to do this. And they've hidden money, and we'll talk about that on another show. I was telling one of my friends, and he knows I'm talking about how some of the ways that they can actually hide this money and siphon it off. And they're doing it. Believe me, they're doing it. So the profits that you're seeing are only things that they couldn't have hid otherwise in some other entity. So, and we'll get into that more in another show. But they're swimming in money, and they can afford to pay for a couple billion dollars a year. They can afford to pay health care and pension and new hire wages, I mean tier one wages for all of the new hires that have hired in since 2007, and have everybody that hires in as a temporary have a pathway if they get 90 out of 180 days in any given time. That way they can ascend up through the ranks as it used to be. It used to be 90 days, you get your 90 days, and now they give you 180 days in which to get 90, you know, or used to be, until this last agreement. Now they've changed that. There's no more pathways. So they can make it right for you Tier 2 people. Believe me, they have the money and the wherewithal to do it, and if we didn't have people in our IUAW that just simply didn't care about you, then it would already have happened. And you know what? This idea of a targeted strike in one of the Detroit Three is absolute balderdash. If you're going to go out and do something, you're going to take everybody out at the same time. Everybody.
Yep.
Just go out.
Absolutely.
Okay? You mean that's just something, that's how it's going to have to happen, and that if people talk about revolution, we don't have to have everybody in the country with guns going after everybody. All we got to do is do it smart. And smart is not sitting on our thumbs. I'm sick of it, of this, and the people that are being disabused in these plants. Now, getting back to subject, I'm sorry I'm so far off there, but Tier 2 came up. And, Travis, you guys, all of you brothers and sisters in the Tier 2, believe me, there's a lot of folks out here that don't like what's happened to you. None of us, because it affects our communities. And you're seeing that in Toledo now. And the fewer jobs we have, the less money these communities have to run their own business as a government. So, having said that, let me get David in. David, you got something on this issue here? We got another. Oh, we got almost 20 minutes, so we got some time.
Well, yeah. It's a question I'd like to ask Travis. I wondered if he saw this week in the news. About FCA and Google forming a partnership for driverless cars. Was my understanding that. How do you feel about that?
I think honestly with FCA, if they're going to try to partner up with anybody, I would like to see it be technology. Because it seems like the future of cars is going to be all the connectivity and bells and whistles and what have you. As far as the driverless car, wouldn't be my cup of tea, but again, you know, if it helps our sales, I don't think it should be an entire issue. And I think the beauty of it is right now, I think really with Sergio, most of his compensation has been in profit sharing. He's really just trying to up the value of the company. He's looking to cash out in 2018. So he's looking for someone attractive with a bunch of money. And that's kind of what he's doing with all the shuffling. It's basically to minimize the cost of production and increase the production. So, this one would be the icing on the cake for him, but I really don't think it'd be bad for FCA in general. Basically our fleet mileage doesn't do all that well. Hopefully some of the tech would help with that. And then if you partnered with a larger automaker, there's a good chance they would just look at, you know, gutting us and using the bones. So I don't think you have that threat there. So if he's going to find a partner, I think Google would be the lesser of the evils. And they definitely certainly have the cash flow. But as far as if it's feasible or if it's going to happen, it's hard telling because Sergio has a fantasy about partnering with somebody, and it seems like everything that he spells out, the person he's talking about has the opposite feeling, because for a while he's talking about how Chevy is gonna merge with him, and in his mind it was a real scenario, and in Chevy's mind it was not there. So we'll see if this Google one pans out, but as far as securing future for the workers, I think it's probably the closest to the mark.
Yeah, they don't want to be in the business of manufacturing cars, just the tech end. So
yeah, and that's what he's trying to subsidize is the cost of it. And honestly, that's where, you know, like we have that 8-speed transmission. It took a little while to get the technology corrected to where. So, and again, the higher speed transmissions that are computer controlled actually do give us significant improvements in fuel economy, but they also up the complication and factor to it. So I think having someone in the tech world would probably solve some of our ills.
Right. Well, one of the things, I mean, I've been in some community meetings outside the auto industry on some other issues, and there's a lot of people talking about what's called a connected vehicle, connectivity, and that's where it's, you know, pretty similar to what Google's talking about, where you can not have accidents because it senses how close you are to another car, have wires in the road so that your destination is pre-programmed into the road, and you just follow that wire, and it'd be a driverless car. Effectively, you just have to sit there and watch the car go. These are things that not just Sergio and Google are talking about. There's a whole lot of folks talking about it. But I'm guessing from where I'm sitting that you're going to see a 3D printed and manufactured vehicle before you see connectivity, because connectivity precursor is that you have to have the infrastructure and the roads all programmed and wired up properly. So that has to be done, and that's a lot of money, brothers and sisters, and we're not going to see that anytime soon, because they're begging for money for infrastructure. I was at a meeting 2.5 weeks ago where they were begging for money from the philanthropists. They were asking for them to cover the cost of infrastructure because there's no money, because all the jobs have left our country and there's no tax base here anymore. And I touched on that, and they didn't like my comment. We'll put that video up sometime soon because it's a little early for everybody to see that one. But I give them hell down there, believe me. And they just cringed when they listened to brother from the building trades on the panel, and they cringed when I was there in the audience talking about why our jobs have left and why they should be back and what are they going to do about it. And these are people that wear in $5,000 suits, you know. So they got a long way to try and get connectivity, no matter what Sergio or the Google guy, he's from East Lansing here in Michigan, that owns Google, him and his partner that own it. But they're a long way from having connectivity. They're a lot closer to seeing 3D printed cars than they are that, believe me, because they have to do, they're about two steps away from having these little mini manufacturing places, 1,500 square feet, they're talking, that they can build a car in right now with a 3D printer, and they can do it in one staff hour to do it. So pretty sad what's going on. So a little bit off topic, but, you know, these are things that are in our future, and we really have to be aware of our future before we can go out there and affect it from labor's aspect. You know, there's, I want to just touch on labor. You know, there's capital, the company, there's labor, and then there's the resultant enterprise. An enterprise is supposed to be beneficial for all of us here. And it's not, you know, enterprise going on down in Mexico and transferring it all to Mexico isn't helping labor at all here in the United States. And we ought to be standing up tall, real tall, against that occurring, not being smug about it like Norwood Jewell and Dennis Williams being punitive to Toledo down there. That's just simply wrong, sending their work to Mexico. Not cool. You know, not cool at all. David, do you have more on that you wanted to go with?
Do we know if the Belvedere plant in Illinois has heard anything about the work they're going to receive, or are they still in limbo?
They're still leaving it pretty gray for everybody. I can tell you, I want to get into details, but I can tell you it's definitely on the move, because there's enough activity between the two plants that it's obvious where the move is going. But, yeah, they're still keeping them up in the air, and Toledo up in the air for that matter. And from what I've seen, because I'm relatively new to this, but from what I've seen is basically the company doesn't like to let you know when they're going to pull the rug out from underneath you to begin with. So that's part of the deal with it, you know. is I think they want to keep everybody up in the air so they don't know when they're going to get laid off. They don't know when they're going to, you know, basically get stuck in launch mode or anything else.
Yeah, that's a bad feeling.
Jeff, you got more to handle? You got more to offer here? Add to it?
Not on the Google thing, no.
You got anything more on the outsourcing of work by Ford, Chrysler, and anybody else to Mexico, and the idea that GM's effectively outsourced that Buick to China? We got three companies doing it. Anything else to add, Jeff?
If I remember correctly, you know, we talked about Verizon being a welfare company. GM is also on that list, I believe. Last time I looked, they took some money from the bailout. And from what I understand, if I'm wrong, somebody please correct me, they haven't paid a dime back from those bailouts. And it's just corporate greed. It's just a matter of time before these companies price themselves right out of the market because nobody's going to be able to afford to buy or lease a new car. Then what are they going to do? Because we already know that people in Mexico can't buy a car. People in China, most of them, don't buy a car. So who's going to buy new vehicles in 20 years? So they better start thinking about it. They're pricing themselves right out of business.
They're about to see something real soon. You watch and
yes.
see. This stock market's up there bumping around 18,000, and it started out in this run from 6,600. Okay, that's a lot of movement. That's, you know, almost straight up. And there's some patterns at the top of this. It's looking pretty toppy, folks. So you all ought to be aware that something's about to happen. We don't know when, but it's awful topping, and the topping patterns are in. There's certain things that are there. So these people that think that they cut great big fat hog, you know, in the butt, they're going to find out real soon here that things are about to change. So be careful, everybody, with your money right now. So just a little on the side there. And Jeff, on the issue of General Motors, they gave the country stock. I don't recall the exact amount or the exact number. I think they got $50 billion or something like that from the company, from the country. And the stock, the country has sold all of the stock that they owned. That occurred. I think at the end of 14, they finally sold all their stock. And so they have no more stock. They sold it less than what they gave out, but that was the deal. So the General Motors really didn't pay them anything since they gave them some stock that they sold for less than what they actually gave the company. So the country is, short, I'm going to say about $12 billion or something like that after they sold their stock. But they hold no more stock. The country is out of the business of shareholder for General Motors. The United States government's no longer a shareholder in a direct way like they were with that relationship. So maybe some indirect ways, but just to clear that up a little bit.
That stock giveaway is a losing proposal anyway. They did the same thing at FCA and with our Viva shares. And so basically they owed us $6 billion, and we took shares in exchange, and Sergio paid us back $4 billion. So when the company was in the toilet, apparently these shares were worth $6 billion. Once the company's had a couple of years of record production, apparently they're only worth $4 billion. You know? And so that's, you know, right out of retirement health care, the thing that they can't afford to give me. Mm-hmm. You know, so
correct.
There's $2 billion right out the door.
Right.
You know, that were,
okay.
You know, was earned. You know, it's not like this was money that grown on trees. It was earned over lifetimes, you know, of people in that factory. And yet, you know, Sergio snatched away and our leadership signed their name on the dotted line, and that was the end of it. Because basically what he did was he was offering an IPO, and they thought that that would be an issue if they're still holding that large a share of the stock, that it would devalue the stock. So they kind of, you kind of use that as leverage to kind of get it out from under us, you know, because all these different
right.
things that we've done to help save the company. And when the company's turned back around, the first thing they did was monopolize on it and use their greed to maximize what they took from us, you know. So it wasn't good enough that we had to give them money to bail them out. They had to make sure they made a little profit off that deal as well.
Right. Little history, which tells you what they think of the people that make their profits. Right. I'll give you a little history, Travis. In 2005, December 10th, I guess we actually filed on the 12th. I was filed against the VEBA. We tried to stop it. I filed as intervening plaintiff with a team of lawyers from Detroit and another team from just outside of Philadelphia. They had Supreme Court experience. So we thought we had this wrapped up and we were going to prevail and prevent this from happening. Well, in the end, they gaveled down and they chastised me. The judge did quite severely. And then after it was all said and done, they went through the bankruptcy a little bit and it bounced out of that all right. They, even though they said it was legal to put our stock into the VEBA, okay, as holders, they had to get a waiver from ERISA in order to do that because of the Enron rule. In other words, the employees, members, can only own so much stock, and to back the VEBA with our stock from the respective companies was simply wrong. By the way, we had joinder at the Circuit Court of Appeals, the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals, so I was the only one at that hearing that Ford, GM, and Chrysler got joined in the lawsuit. So I was actually the intervening plaintiff for all three entities at that time, and then we were shot down at that level as well, and then it went up beyond there. But again, we didn't have any success there either. So, having said that, the consideration to go further was considered. But having said that, pretty knowledgeable about that. They had to get two waivers. They had broken the law twice, 35-year-old ERISA law and the EEOC. It was against the law to give older employees less health care than younger employees or members. We'll just use the term member because even though we were retirees, we're still members, and it's against EEOC. So they had to get two waivers of law. So it doesn't matter what the legislatures go ahead and prove and sign into law through the president. These companies, because of their cozy relationship with government and the courts, the executive branch, legislative branch, and the courts, can just go do anything they want to do. So we're at a real disadvantage, and it's difficult to even find a lawyer to take a case because of that right now, and they're stacked so far hard against us in the judicial system. So that's just an aside on the VEBA and how legal that really isn't that they did that. Yeah, they got a waiver, but it was illegal. So we're getting close to the end of time. Does anybody have, having said that, Travis, I hope I didn't open too many more Johari windows for you, but we can discuss it in another show, but we're getting close to the end of this one. Anybody have anything else to add that they'd like to add before we think about closing this out real quickly? Jeff or David?
Yeah, I want to. We have a lot of people retiring in the big three. They're taking advantage of the new retiree language. I wish all the retirees the best of luck in their new chapter in life. We're going to miss y'all. Some of you guys have been real strong supporters, you know, union activists. We just want to wish you the best. Hope you made the right decision. And just, you know, I had a lot of good friends retire this year, and Friday was their last day. We still have more coming up future months, people leaving my plant. So I just want to wish the new retirees the best of luck, and we'll be thinking about you. That's all I got.
Okay. Well, thanks, Jeff. David, do you have anything real quick?
No, I'm good.
Okay. Travis, anything else real quick?
Yeah, just while we're on the topic of today, you know, as far as, you know, I think just anybody out there listening really needs to think about this because, I mean, you can see as the corporations looked at labor to bail them out of their financial issues, and then as soon as they turn around, the first thing they do is start shipping our jobs overseas, is we really start need to think about the mentality they had, you know, in decades previous about companies that chose to basically produce their products overseas. And we really need to start thinking about that as we spend our dollars and as we punch into clock every day, is think about what those corporations think of the everyday working man, and we need to start thinking of them as adversaries. You know, when we're spending our dollars, when we're punching into work, and when we're discussing things with friends, is we need to start going, okay, well, you know, it's going to be something we look at with shame when we see someone that bought, you know, the Chinese alternative to what they could have bought in America. Because, you know, at one point in time, people did look for a union label. And now all of a sudden, you know, look at what's going on with Verizon, but we need people to go, okay, well, here's the deal. Verizon, I appreciate your service. You do a great job, but you don't get any more of my business until you treat your workers the way they're supposed to. You know, because if not, you're going to have this small percentage of people monopolizing over all of us indefinitely, because until we've said we've had enough, they'll keep taking.
Exactly.
Agreed, Travis. Thank you. Thank
Agreed.
You. I want to, yeah. Let's just close this. Do you think that the Detroit at Solidarity House in Detroit, that the IUAW leadership has failed us in their ability to control the loss of jobs to foreign countries, third world countries, albeit that have actually have national health care. Has the IUAW failed the membership in its efforts and attempts to curtail work being sent overseas or to Mexico? Do we have
they
consensus?
They have failed at every level. Yes.
Travis?
I believe failed is an understatement. It seems like they're applauding the opportunity to move jobs overseas to me. I have yet to see a firebrand speech out of Dennis Williams or anybody in the IUAW chastising these companies for what they're doing. And as a matter of fact, Dennis tries to rationalize it as it's a part of business and the way we practice it today. And I'm sorry, I don't excuse that as an answer. You know, just because it is doesn't mean that's the way it's supposed to be. And that seems like what our leaders seem to carry the baton with. Oh, well, it's cheaper in Mexico. I guess we'll just start shipping small cars there without so much as a fight. I don't remember anything from our president saying this is an egregious act, this is a travesty or anything of that nature. He basically said this is the way of business in today's economy. Well,
okay.
That's your
okay.
fault.
Okay, thank you. Sounds like we have consensus there that the IUAW has failed the membership in this regard and is deficient in its leadership in this regard of jobs leaving to Mexico and other countries. So with that, I'd like to thank our co-hosts this evening on air, Jeff Brown from Flat Rock, David Fillion from the Greater Lansing area, Travis Carr from Toledo. Terry Crowell Norris was unable to be here. She's from the Brook Park area. Roberta Gaynor from the Tonawanda area, kind of side, sort of out there, and with us in spirit tonight. And myself, Leroy McKnight, certainly we appreciate all the listeners here. Remember that our email address is workingforaliving@workingforaliving, and please follow us on Blog Talk Radio if you get the chance and listen to the show. Remember, this is a podcast, so you can check it anytime through the week or go back and listen to the historic shows if you want to. If you found value in this show, please tell just one more person. If you just let somebody else know that there's stuff here going on and you're being brought up to date and getting some education on different issues from a lot of history here, a lot of experience from these folks, and we're happy to have Travis here to add an aspect of the younger Tier 2 worker as well. So having said that, here's a hearty shout-out to all our friends in Brook Park, Flat Rock, Tonawanda, Lordstown, Flint, Pontiac, Detroit, Lansing, Toledo, Chicago, Kansas City, St. Louis, Wentzville, Arlington, Chattanooga, Tennessee, Doraville, Georgia, Santa Cruz, California, and everyone else around the country and around the world who listen in. Thank you so very much. Everyone, good night, and stay safe.
Good night. Good night, everybody.
Good night. It's been a pleasure.
Good night.